Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gabfest. We're on a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture. What we like to read and who we like to read. Food for Thought, you do not need tongs to toss our salad.
Wow, that was really good.
You don't
good.
Need a song, but you do need
so
a good
true.
Song,
boo.
There you go. Oh. I set it up, and Den took it. There
Listen,
you go.
I love to take.
You do take it. You do be taking.
Okay.
How's everybody doing today? How is our monkeypox anxiety?
It's high. Ooh. I've been thinking about it the last day. Well, I mean, like, I don't even know what, like, the tea is. I'm just scared of another pandemic, and I'm trying to get a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. We're all trying to get vaccines. We're waiting in lines. We're writing letters.
This was supposed to be a summer trampage, and now I feel like I can't let nobody touch me.
Mm-mm.
You won't break my hole. Mm-mm. Because of the monkeypox. Because I have to lock it up again.
Joe got a vaccine.
I got a vaccine here.
Wait,
in Los
are
Angeles.
You serious?
As part of the category of other men,
quote unquote. I am an other man. Yes, Den is making fun of the fact that New York City, for really awesome reasons, is excluding trans women from vaccination, which is just—it's been hell. We live in hell. My life is hell. My brain is mush. Yeah, I don't want to do it anymore. It's so bad. It's so stupid. So in New York City, it's gay, bisexual, and other men are eligible for vaccination because that's a meaningful category.
Do you know, for the listeners out there, are there any resources where we could like find where they have vaccines? Or is there a hub of sorts?
By the time this comes out. Mm. Things should have changed significantly on the vaccination front. So check your local, it'll be your city or state Department of Health will be the place to go for vaccine information.
Well, thankfully the vaccination clinic that Joe went to is like 4 blocks from my apartment. So I'm going to try to stand in line. And
It was the most joyous line of gay men. You could tell that like half of us were like, thank God. And the other half were like, oh no, I'm waiting at an STI clinic for like a vaccine. And I was, it was
that's
amazing.
Like my experience of going to a gay bar just in general. Like some people are happy to be there and some people, me, I don't want to be. I don't want to be.
You do not.
Hello, I am Tommy Teebs Pico, Indigenous American poet, screenwriter, TV writer, and I got a drill from Home Depot, so I'm technically Butch.
You are so Butch Teebs. I love that for you. I'm Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer, and I was born with a drill from Home Depot in my right hand. Came out of the womb like that. Put it in shelves.
Hit, Dad.
Wow. Love it.
Oh, God. I'm Den Michelle Norris. I'm a reader, writer, and former figure skater, and I'm here to remind you that just because you have a drill doesn't mean you have to actually do any goddamn drilling, okay?
Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Kenya Denise. I am the creative director of Domino Sound. I'm a podcast producer, and Alex and I got invited to an all-male pride party.
Oh, no.
We were the only women invited, and I don't know if that says something really good or something bad about us.
Did you go?
Hell yeah, I went. Bitch, it was one of the best parties of my life. I was living my goddamn life. I love the gays. But I was just, it just, you know, it really, it stood out when we walked in. I was like, damn, So I'm like, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like gay men are like fucking with us like really hard.
Which can be a great thing, but it can turn into a hot mess real quick.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't trust them.
Okay.
Don't trust
as far as you can throw them. Okay.
Teams, you want to tell us what's on the menu today?
Today, we're looking at adaptations for film and television from such sources as articles, books, podcasts, if you will. We're going to start off the top of the show the way any good top should, with a little swipe right, swipe left, our classic game of boot or toot. And we finish with a sweet petite treat.
Take it away.
Buck, 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 be guck. I'm feeling a little bit peckish. Let's start at the top of the show the way any good top should, with a little tease, our uproarious appetizer segment, Amuse Boosh. And I'm going to amuse you, Booshes, today with our classic swipe right, swipe left game. Swipe left means boot. Swipe right means toot. You got
it? I toot all the time.
Yes, you are so toot. This is for you, Ho. First up, swipe right, swipe left, the Supreme Court.
Oh, swipe left, get rid of it. Done. Abolish it. It has no power here. It has no power here. That is what I have decided.
It hurts.
I'm still depressed about all that shit.
Me
and
too.
I'm angry. But I'm just like, first of all, fuck them. And then, do we have to listen to them?
No.
Right.
Okay, because I'm like kind of, I'm feeling the whole like become ungovernable.
Yes. Thing. Yes.
I feel like that's the only way to really survive.
And
out
listen,
here, so.
Becoming ungovernable, it's an American tradition. Okay.
Period.
Like,
period.
It we overthrow our institutions. And I'm like, every decision they hand, I don't know if this is like their busy season, their bitchy season, like what is going on. But I'm like, every decision, I'm like, you are making the wrong decision. And you only have authority because we choose to allow you to have authority, and we can take it away. I'm so over the Supreme Court, except Ketanji. She could stay, but I'm just like, you have no more validity in my eyes. Fuck you.
Right. Right.
I do hope that like the end result of all of this horror is like we declare the Supreme Court like the king with no clothes on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Just because like I feel they are undermining their own authority by being the most unpopular group of bitches in America. And that's saying something.
Yes.
And also I don't this is the first Supreme Court to actually rescind constitutional rights, so...
they can sit in their little building and write their little decisions that no one will listen to. Let's have that be the future.
Yeah.
I hope that's it.
I also just... I'm not a lawyer, but, like, if you overturn...
Wait. Dan, you're not a lawyer?
Wow.
But if you... If you overturn precedent, then why in God's name would you think that going forward anyone is going to look at what you decided as new precedent? Because all you did was like make it clear that precedent doesn't exist. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. So like now this overturning Roe v. Wade, well, guess what? It's not overturned. Bah. Like, I mean, you can't actually just say that. But my point is that's not precedent. There's no more precedent anymore.
You are giving me serious Legally Blonde vibes right now, Dee.
I agree with everything you said.
That used to be my dream. That was my aspiration when I saw that movie for a whole year after that.
Commitment.
Got it. Swipe right, swipe right, swipe left on parades.
No, I'm homophobic. I hate pride. I hate parades. I hate people. Too many people, small spaces, outside, it's hot out. No, I do not like it. I swipe left.
Swipe left. They block traffic. They make it impossible to get anywhere. Swipe left.
Swipe right because I like fun.
Boo. No.
It is messy though, because you know, it gets hot, it gets sweaty. Let me tell you a little story. So, speaking for producer Alex here, she would swipe left 100%. So, our friends got invited us to Pride, and they had some like special box seat that was right in front of the parade, and there was going to be free food and free drinks the whole time. So I was like, yes, 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 let's live VIP life. We got ready. We stepped off the train. We were in the crowd for like 3 minutes.
Nope.
And Alex was like, we gotta go home. So we took our asses immediately back home. Respect. Never crossed the street to even get into the box seat. So that's how it is. I love them, but I also understand why they are difficult and why people hate them.
Trying to cross the street at a parade is like my hell would just be having to cross the street and then back again over and over again at a parade. Oof. Until for forever.
Wow.
One time I was dragged to the Pride Parade by a bunch of friends, and we were trying to go into a bar on Christopher Street.
Nope.
And there was the barricades, you know, because it's also policed, right? So it's
right.
Like those
so many police
cop barricades. And then these two homosexuals got into a fight with each other right in front of us, and one tried to bite off the other one's finger, and my friend got covered in blood, and it was horrible. It was so bad.
Wow, that's a moment.
Yeah, well, the girls
are fighting. The girls are biting fingers almost off.
Well, I mean, that's a result, I think, of my next swipe right, swipe left, which is day drinking.
Ah! Swipe right.
Ooh. Swipe left.
Swipe left, I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I don't like being drunk when the sun is on me. Yeah. Yep.
What?
Because then you have a hangover by dinner time.
Like, I hate that feeling.
You don't have to be drunk, though. You can just have a nice, smooth, gentle buzz throughout the day.
I find that it's hard to maintain.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
It is hard. And it's a lot of liquid, you know? Like, I can't be peeing all the time.
Mm. Oh, gotta keep it cute. I love to pee.
Ugh.
Den feels so good.
I feel like you could just option Den's non sequiturs from this episode themself into a TV show. Listen, yes, I'm not a lawyer.
Oh, okay. God. Swipe right, swipe left on having a body.
Left.
Swipe right, because how would I have sex if I didn't have a body? Although then again, with the monkeypox right now, it's locked up, so.
Swipe right, because the body houses the soul, but it also sucks. But swipe right.
I got to swipe left. I mean, it just not only just having a body, but then also a body that is like, aging and deteriorating. I was like talking with Morgan yesterday, and she pulled out her back by just turning around, and I was like, I tried to go on a run and I fucked up my knee, and now I just have a fucked up knee. And I was like, fucking bodies, man, fucking bodies. Yeah.
It is getting harder and harder out there, people, to be a human with a body. Mm.
Swipe right, swipe left on Jesse Williams dingling.
I refuse to comment on the ding-a-ling because there was no consent given to the video being taken.
Okay, so it was nice. So he obviously doesn't mind that the video dropped, and I'm going to swipe right because it was beautiful. Yeah, exactly.
I'll say both. I want to swipe right and swipe left because I enjoyed the length and girth. I do, though, it was recorded in a manner that was sus, so I don't like that, but ultimately, like that. Yes, I'm into the dick. I would swipe right, swipe left, pet owners who refer to themselves as mom or dad and their pets as their children.
Swipe right? Are you kidding? That's literally my life. Like, yes! I'm always like, Soul, you better act right to white mother. Like, okay. She went up to Alex and was like acting real cute for her birthday. And then she just bit her. Like, she's just doing so much. And I was like, Soul, please treat white mother with respect. And then sometimes I have to take Soul away from Alex. And I'm like, Soul, it's black mother time. So we have black mother time at least twice a day.
Important. And usually that's important.
Right.
That really matters.
Soul is definitely our child. We are her moms, and she knows her race, which is black and Italian.
Listen, that is key and very important. I cherish my role as auntie in Mr. Sheffield's life. So,
Mr. Sheffield, who's a good boy?
Mr. Sheffield. He is the sweetest little guy.
Does he love a belly rub?
He loves a belly rub.
He's a good boy.
Clingy. But it's really cute and we love it. So, no, I support it. I'd rather, listen, pups over kids. So, That's how I feel.
I'm just going to swipe left because it's weird. But I will swipe right on the having of the pets. And I will swipe right on being the auntie because I don't think I could ever take care of one. I mean, Sun really did a number on my plants years ago. It hasn't recovered. So
Sun has problems. Sorry.
All right. For the final swipe right, swipe left, I'm going to say swipe right, swipe left on being attracted to men.
Left, left,
swipe left,
left. Oh,
I'm praying that when I start HRT, it'll make me attracted to women.
I believe it can happen. I believe in you.
I've heard it can.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, update us. I'm going to say swipe right because I'm actually a bisexual and I love everyone. Mm. But men are terrible.
Yes.
But I believe like 1% of them are probably maybe okay.
The other men. These are the famous other men. The New York City Department of Health have been warning us about.
Leaving myself open for that, you know.
For the other men. Amen. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for playing that game with us. I hope you learned absolutely nothing. Goodbye. I think it's time we get to the meat of our discussion, the thought process spelled T-H-O-T.
T-H-O-T.
And I will be slinging the meat this week. We're going to be talking about adaptations, you know, from books, from articles, from podcasts. And we're going to talk about our favorite and not so favorite adaptations, why they often fail. Is there an adaptation that's been better than the source material? Were you ever surprised that something was an adaptation or that it actually wasn't an adaptation and it was a fully realized, fully new idea? But before we get to that, if you were going to adapt Food for Thought for film and television, who would play you?
Oh, that's really hard. Teams, I'm not ready for that question.
Whoa.
Matt Rogers.
Oh, my God.
I'm a scoot right past that.
I would say a young Keanu Reeves.
Oh, I could see that, TBZ.
Wow. Okay, you're just going for it.
Yeah, I could see that.
So nothing really matters.
Nothing really matters, no.
Okay, so, okay.
Pick.
I'm going to cast Fran. Actually, Den, you go. I still got to think about it.
I'm thinking about someone for Fran, too. But for me, I would really love for it to be Angelica Ross. I just love everything about her. And she would make me proud of me.
No.
In the
role of Joe, I would probably cast a tall potted cactus.
I can't.
It's perfect. It's the perfect like.
Does that have enough water in it to cry the amount of time that Joe spends crying?
All of the water goes to the tears.
It famously, the cactus's moisture is all inside of the plant, you know what I mean?
And wow.
Also I think that like it's dry. It's dry. It's so dry. It's thirsty. It needs water.
It does need. It's thirsty. And Ken, you need to cast yourself. We need to know who's going to play Kenya.
We do.
I feel like Kiki Palmer. I feel like Kiki Palmer would be really good me.
A good energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She would be very good.
Who'd you cast as Alex?
Oh my God. Dakota Johnson.
Really?
Yes.
I think I have the perfect actor in mind. Scarlett Johansson should play all of us.
You're right.
Best choice. Alex should be played by Butch Kristen Stewart.
Yes, that works
as well.
Yeah, I can
see that.
I think that would be good.
Teams, you wanted to bring up this topic. What is your favorite adaptation?
Well, I just saw Passing, which was based on the novella by Nella Larsen. Mm-hmm. And I love that book. I thought its adaptation was nice. I thought the performances were really good. And you know, the thing is like, what I'm always fascinated about adaptations is like because I'm trying to adapt something myself right now from a web series into a television show. Like, I think the successful adaptations aren't necessarily the ones that are like fit the thing to it that have adapted from the source material to a T, but they have
like
some,
so literal.
Yeah, that's not such a literal adaptation, but it does capture the spirit of what the source material was about. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of Hustlers. Right. But that was based on an article, and I think the Atlantic or the New Yorker or something like that. And I thought I'm biased. I loved Hustlers. I saw it 17 times. Shout out Christina Tucker. You know what I'm talking about. but it was, but in like it changed some of the names and it changed some of the ages and all that kind of stuff. But it really did get to this idea of these women who were being taken advantage of by the club, by the system, by the financial crisis, taking matters into their own hands, you know? And like the ethics and the morality of it are in question, but, you know, it was also like, what recourse do these women have? You know, who can they go to right these wrongs? They can't. They don't have anybody they can go to, so they take it into their own hands. I think that's why I loved this idea, or why I loved that adaptation so much. And I was wondering, too, with the rest of y'all, I thought about this topic again because Joe, we were just joking on text, and Joe was talking about adapting this novel that he's working on. I'm curious, like, is there an adaptation that stands out for y'all?
I'm of two minds about this, about, like, the perfect adaptation being super literal versus being completely bonkers in its own thing. Because I think just before the Fire Island movie, which is an adaptation of Pride and Prejudice, I went back and revisited the 1995 BBC miniseries Pride and Prejudice.
Oh, that's the best one.
Oh,
the best one.
Oh my God, I love that.
Good.
It's a classic.
It is like, it is amazing. And also at the time in the 90s, there weren't that many limited series. And so it felt super long because it's like 5 1-hour episodes. And it came in this giant box set of VHS tapes, right?
Yeah.
And now that we're so used to streaming and now that we're so used to like binging things, you go by and you're like, oh my God, that's actually really short. It's only 5 hours of content, which for then was crazy, for now is like totally normal. But it is such a literal adaptation. Like the dialogue comes from the book and the characters are so, and that's why it's so long, right? Because it has all of these twists and turns that you typically have time for in a novel that you don't have time for in a movie that's 90 minutes or 2 hours, right? Yeah. And so, but the adaptation is so perfect. Like, it's so good and it's so true to what the book is, and the acting is all phenomenal, and it totally is its own singular thing. And then I think of an adaptation like the film Adaptation, which is like fucking bonkers, you know, and it's so meta and it's so weird, and it starts meta and even just gets more meta, and it is completely divorced from the source material, which is a New Yorker profile, right? So it's like, but both of those are phenomenal adaptations because the final work of art is just the thing that it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. I fell asleep watching Adaptation.
I think, though, to your point about the miniseries being a better adaptation perhaps than a feature, is I think there's more opportunities for that now. You know, I'm thinking about like Little Fires Everywhere, which was not a perfect adaptation, but it's it being a limited series allowed for it to be more like the book, you know. And I think of like unsuccessful adaptations, in my opinion, like Great Expectations or Midnight's Children. They just tried to fit too much shit an hour and a half.
That's right. When it gets so busy that you're so worried about, like, people who read the book and loved it being mad that XYZ didn't happen, that you actually completely lose the fact that a film in 90 minutes can only do but so much. And it's really about, like, what is, like you're saying, like, what is the spirit of the text and what are the essential components that need to be scaffolded into what a movie can and can't do?
One of the things that I've been thinking about with adaptations more recently, and really this was spurred by us deciding to do this topic, I was also thinking of Little Fires Everywhere, and I haven't read the book yet. It's like very high on my list, though, because it takes place in Shaker Heights. I grew up right next to Shaker Heights and Cleveland Heights. Shout out to Celeste Ng. We love a Cleveland author. But one of the things I was thinking about was with that TV adaptation, the decision to have the character of Mia played by Kerry Washington and to have her be a Black woman, which is not said explicitly in the novel. At least that's my understanding from like the sort of articles I read. And Celeste Ng has talked about how she didn't feel like she could write, you know, well about like a Black woman's experience and that sort of circumstance. And so she left the race open. But I thought it was so interesting because it premiered in, I think, May of 2020. So it was literally just like weeks before so many of the racial conversations that we've been having for years really boiled over with the murder of George Floyd. And I just remember thinking it was an interesting choice to really highlight the racial differences in that adaptation. And when I used to think of adaptation, all I thought about was taking something that had been originally conceived and written and produced and whatever in one form and putting it in another. But what about taking something and also adapting it to the time that it's going to go public in now, right? Like it's almost like they had a crystal ball. And of course, like, they didn't. But, you know, there were already so many tensions and things happening and so many important conversations around race. And my understanding was that Reese Witherspoon was looking for a project to do with Kerry Washington. So they had this idea mm-hmm. to do this. And I'm assuming Celeste Ng signed off on it. And I just thought that was really interesting that they also adapted the project for the very contemporary context within which it was going to be represented to the world. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to do.
It was also such an early lockdown like Corona Phase 1 type watch. Because I remember it was within the first 2 weeks of the lockdown, I was watching Little Fires Everywhere and transferring all of my, like, because I had a bunch of travel-sized lotions and shampoos and stuff like that because I toured a lot. And it was just like watching Little Fires Everywhere and putting all of my small containers of lotion and shampoo into larger containers of lotion and shampoo. God. Consolidating, if you
that
will.
That is bleak.
And that was like a Tuesday afternoon.
Oh my God.
Wow. But I will say about the Little Fires Everywhere adaptation, because I did read the book and I was excited to see they were turning it into a film. Adding the dimensionality of her Blackness on it was not something in the book. But then also there's this really great line where I'm going to butcher it, but Reese Witherspoon says, "I made good choices." And Kerry Washington says, "You had choices to make," or something like that. Like that exists. That is not in the book, and that it is an added innovation on the source material.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as you guys are saying, like, I think my favorite type of adaptation is when the race element comes in, or if it's completely colorblind casting, or if they just make it fully Black. So I'm a film girl. I love The Wiz as an adaptation of The Wizard of Oz, mm-hmm. and I love Brandy Cinderella. Like, I know, like, it's technically not the best film, but it is the best film. You know what I mean?
I know,
like,
exactly.
And
what
I felt
mean.
Like the element of the multiracial casting was amazing, and it, I mean, everything was so batshit, I could totally believe that world, and I loved it. I think sometimes it doesn't go well. Did you guys see the, like, racial colorblind casting of Oklahoma, the Broadway play?
No.
I did not see that. I had someone that I know who's in it, but I didn't know.
Really? So the thing is, like, I actually like Oklahoma. Like, I love Broadway. I like that white people shit. It was a little strange. The colorblind casting, I couldn't quite get there. Like, I mean, I get what they were trying to do, and I'm all about equality and equity, but I feel like with certain stories, it just doesn't quite fit.
Right.
But I know other people have different opinions.
Because
so.
It might be, like, if it's a story about whiteness,
right.
let whiteness be whiteness, you know what I
right.
mean? So it's like, that's not, and maybe sometimes you just don't have to tell that story again, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if
right.
the story doesn't work with, and I mean, we do need to be telling stories about whiteness, but there are ways to do that. Like, in my novel, for example, I made the conscious choice to have only be white people because I didn't want to be writing characters of color in this world, and it's about murdering toxic whiteness. It is like, mm-hmm. the whiteness is what the book is about, and it just felt tokenizing to like force someone else in there, you know. So, but like you're saying, Ken, sometimes, like, you can let a new thing happen. And, you know, since we're talking about Broadway and race, I mean, we, you know, the Hamilton of it all, right, where you take like literal like slave owning people and then invert the race, and it just because I'm not taking any position on it. It's just complicated and not often talked about with enough nuance.
Right.
I mean, Hamilton, like, I totally accepted it because everything about the founding fathers in America.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss
is completely batshit to me, and it seems like a fairy tale. So in that way, when I kind of like don't view it as history, even though I know it is. So I was kind of just like, oh, and it was radical and it was hip hop. So I mean, I loved it when it first came out. But I think looking back, yeah, it's like racially interesting, and it doesn't make sense at all. It doesn't make not one lick of sense.
But yes.
Listen, if they were white and rapping, I'd be mad. So it's kind of like they had to be, you know, in order to be performing at that mm-hmm. level.
So little thing I've actually really never said, I have never really understood why Hamilton exists. Like, what is the point? And I haven't seen it. So maybe it's something that, like, I...
Joe, go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
Maybe I should see it and then I'll get it. But I've seen a few scenes and I'm just like, I'm not sure that I really understand the purpose of inverting the races here. Like, I don't know. It's like, sometimes we do that. Like, a few years ago, this might have been 10 years ago, they made a black remake of Steel Magnolias.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They did?
That was, I mean, it was like on TV. It was like,
oh, wow.
I don't know. Okay. It starred Queen Latifah as the mother, as the Sally Field character. Malin, I think is her name. I love the classic Steel Magnolias. And I was like, this did not need to be done. Like,
I also don't think, okay, call this blasphemy and cancel me. But I don't think Queen Latifah is as good of an actress as Sally Field. So when that scene... When that scene, and you know what scene I'm talking about, if you look at Sally Field's version versus Queen Latifah's version, you could see Queen trying to get there, and she doesn't quite get there emotionally, you know, with the, like, and Sally Field's is marvelous. I mean, it's effortless. It's, she goes back and forth between, I mean, it's a terribly sad moment. And then there's also a funny element to it too, that she just straddles that line so perfectly. And I don't think Queen was successful at that.
Well, you know, Sally Field's whole milieu, I think, like the core, the core of all of it is like, I feel like is motherhood. So much of the fire in her greatness comes from that experience and comes from telling those stories. So like Queen Latifah, I think, is a brilliant actress in a lot of ways, but, and she is a mother. They have a child, but like, that's not at the core of like the art that she's trying to make in the same way. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense that she couldn't access it in the same way. And like, I'll never forget Sally Field's version. I don't remember Queen's. I love her. I do not remember it.
And I love Queen too. I love Living Single. I love UNITY. I love all of the things. It's just, it's a difficult expectation because the original was so good. And so it's like, let's see if we can make this better.
Oh, Teebs, that's something super interesting. Do you ever feel... like when you step in to make an adaptation It's actually really ambitious, right? Yeah. Like making a Fire Island movie based on one of the best novels of all time. And like, I have stressed my nightmares to this day of like being put in a role, even like as an actor or something, and like just knowing that I'm failing at it. I'm thinking of, what's her name from RuPaul's Drag Race that got put in Rent Live on the live musical? And just couldn't sing, just could not sing, and is Angel in the Rent musical. And I'm just like, I have stress dreams about being in that situation, like saying yes to a thing and then realizing my craft will not do the source material justice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It is. But the thing is, that's why I'm saying, like, getting into the spirit of it and not necessarily having to make a letter perfect adaptation and having the adaptation itself be another type of work of art. Mm-hmm. I did not know, Ken, that you were a Broadway girl. I don't know why I didn't pick up on that before. So I have a question.
Whoa. Wow. That's crazy. That's like one of the biggest things about me. Like, I'm a theater kid.
All right. All right. And in that respect, what has been your favorite movie adaptation of a musical, and is there a musical that you would like to see adapted that hasn't been adapted yet?
Whoa. Okay.
It's hard. The movie adaptations of musicals are hard to do well.
They really are. I think, oh shit. I mean, I think the original West Side Story is amazing. Yes. Mm. I think that is actually, that's like an amazing film. Ugh. And it's an amazing show. I guess also shout out Lion King for the reverse of that. Like, the show from the movie is insane. It's like one of my favorite experiences I've ever had on Broadway. Like, I'm just, they just really did that. Sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I feel like things shouldn't be adapted, but I actually am excited to see the Wicked adaptation. And that is one that I would have said, like, I would be interested in seeing that adapted to a movie. And it's happening with Ariana Grande.
Oh, no.
Yes. And I love myself some Ariana. Like, I'm but just, because it's also so campy and ridiculous. I feel like it really lends itself for, like, turning into a movie.
But does Ariana have the Elphaba voice?
I think she's not playing Elphaba. I think she's playing
the Glenda. Glenda.
Yeah. And also, she actually started on Broadway. So she actually does have a really good, I don't think Elphaba, but Glenda for sure.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So I'm definitely excited to see that. I actually really liked the Hairspray one that came out in like 2005 or 2006.
Yeah, I liked that one too.
John Travolta.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I like that one. That one was really cute and light. But yeah, I mean, there's just so many. My mind is like just going insane.
That was the one where I realized that Zac Efron was kind of hot, is the phrase I used at the time.
Kind of, wow.
It was like kind of.
Just hot.
Yeah.
We can't talk about adaptations and Broadway without talking about The Color Purple, because that's an adaptation of a book to a musical that is now being adapted to a Rent Live. Like, it's going to be Color Purple Live.
I literally didn't know that.
But also, I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like it is totally an adaptation of the book, but I feel like it has the movie aspects of the film also.
Yeah.
Sort of built as part of the world building of the musical. I saw, right. So it's like an adaptation of a movie of a book, you know, and they're all kind of in combo. It's amazing. It is so good. I think that's one of those franchises
that is like really good throughout all adaptations. Like, I'm nervous for the new one because it'd be really scary to fuck up, but like, it really, that original work, I think, really just, it works. It keeps giving.
But it's, you know, if you think about, like, what goes on in that book and movie, and you would think Broadway musical, it doesn't, at least in my brain, it doesn't immediately go like, oh, this is totally going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go into it, and it totally was amazing, and it totally works. And it's like, how many good artistic choices had to be made from beginning to end, from book to music to casting to direction to set, you know, and that is just that when it works, you know, and when it's unexpected, when you are like, that sounds like it is not going to be good. And then you go see it and you're like, floored. That is just the best.
Yeah.
Right.
I wasn't prepared.
Another one of my favorite adaptations, I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's a movie from a Broadway show. Yentl.
Barbara Streisand's Yentl.
I mean, that is one of my favorite of all time.
Yentl's
You've
amazing.
Seen it, Den?
I've seen it. I've never seen the play. I've only seen the movie.
Right.
I don't know if I knew it was from a, if it was an adaptation though, but that's amazing.
Yeah, it was. It's just so good. I think the people that are adapting just have to be they have to make some really tough choices about
it
what
is.
To keep in, what to take out, and they really, I feel like everyone has to be super aligned for the art to still be at that level.
Yeah.
And to that extent, again, personal opinion, excoriate me, counsel me, whatever. I don't think plays make for the best adaptation into film. Because I want to see what I want. If I want it to be able to use all of the tools of the medium, right?
Right.
And I was thinking about, you know, when we were in initial talks to turn Food for Thought into like some kind of television show,
right.
it was like, I want it to be more than what we do, but with cameras on. You know, I wanted it to be different than that because it's not utilizing the full potential of television if it's just four people talking. Then it's just like, you can actually just listen to the show. And to that degree, I mean, I think about stuff, and it's not like they were bad because the source material is quite good, but it's like with, for example, like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom or Fences, I mean, it was just so clearly a straight up, like that it didn't do anything else to explore the medium that it was being translated into. And in, like, I did know that Ma Rainey's Black Bottom was a play because I have read it before, but even if I didn't, it'd be like, this is a straight up play. Like, cause it's just people talking fast and like moving into different scenes or whatever.
Well, and it's, and in a play, like you are confined to the stage. Right. And that's why Fences takes place in one house and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom takes place in one club. And so it's sort of, it can feel, you notice the convention. Whereas in a play, it's just sort of that it has to be that way. And there are ways to sort of break those walls down and stuff, but you definitely notice it in a movie when you're like, this is, I feel like I'm watching a filmed version of the play, which I actually kind of would be I would be more interested in that. Right. Like actually filming the play and releasing it that way.
I definitely think it's a little bit of a taller order, but I'm a lot of different minds on it. Cause like, I mean, I really loved Ma Rainey's Black Bottom as a movie, but I was like, I sort of feel like I'm just seeing the play, but like, this is not like when I was in, I don't know, maybe high school or maybe middle school when Tyler Perry was first coming up and doing like his musicals and plays like on the Chitlin circuit, my mom would get VHSs of it, like at church.
Oh my God. Same. Yes. I loved those.
And they were just, it was just Negroes filming it on their handheld device in the theater and selling it. That's what it was, right? So I kept thinking of like those moments when I was watching like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom or when I was watching Fences. And I was like, obviously this is an enormous upgrade from that. Like that's a huge insult maybe to compare it. But I guess because it didn't do more with the new medium, I still like thought of that a little bit. And so that was really interesting to me. But there's this movie that I watched. This was a long time ago too. This was in college, I think. It's called Proof. And it was had Meryl Streep and it had this guy, Jake Greenberg, and I think Uma Thurman in it. And that was also a film adaptation of what was originally a play. And that felt like they really like made a film. Like it didn't feel like they just just made it look like the play on camera. And then I thought about Kerry Washington actually did an adaptation of a Broadway play that she was in 2019 called American Son, which is all about a black woman who's in an interracial relationship with a white husband who is a cop, like a high level cop. And she's at a police station and they're looking for her son. And at first it's just her and the police officers, and then her husband comes, and then there's all those moments of them assuming, you know, like, oh, you're the dad. And da, da, da. Anyway, I watched that, and the whole point, the whole reason why they made that as a Netflix adaptation, film adaptation, was so that more people could see it than, you know, could obviously get to Broadway. Mm-hmm. It had a relatively limited run. You know, Broadway tickets are expensive. And so they wanted this to be available to everyone. And so there was no interest in really making it a film beyond that. And so watching that with that in mind and knowing that it was sort of like a stand-in for the Broadway experience, I thought was also really interesting and different. Interesting.
I could see that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another one, sorry, one more that I'll talk about, because this is actually a little bit of my I'm very interested in like straight plays more so than musicals and how they're adapted. August Osage County. So I saw that on Broadway right after I graduated from my MFA. It was phenomenal, like insane, gorgeous, 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 like play. And then the film came out, and that was another time where I was like, they like made this a film. Like they made this a film. That was the intent. Mm-hmm. That was the goal. And I felt like it sort of did what an adaptation is supposed to do. So that's a good one.
I have a question for y'all. Do we need more adaptations of or modernizations of Shakespeare or Austin or these things that have sort of been adapted to death that are usually a part of the, you know, the white Western quote unquote literary canon? Is it interesting still?
I mean, I think we don't need them, but I think sometimes when they're well done, I enjoy it. Like I enjoy Little Women, even though there's been like 15 of those motherfuckers.
Or if you take it and you do like a Clueless. Right. Like, I think that's more interesting. But I think that first of all, getting things made, like, this is, like, when I go into meetings, they're always like, what are you looking to adapt? What are you looking to adapt? They're like, I feel like so many people are at this point, and not people, the investors that make up the backbone of Hollywood are less likely at this point to take a risk on an original idea rather than something that is IP that has been an article that has proven at least some interest. And I think going back to sort of like the Shakespeare stuff, I mean, ultimately, it's good storytelling, like, and that these works have survived to a certain extent is because of the conventions of story that they inhabit, right? But like, I think you could bare bones, like take any Shakespeare play or the more prominent ones and like just lay that in a contemporary context and you would have a new story. Is it the most interesting? I don't know. I think how many types of stories are there? There's like basically seven types of stories, I think. Yeah. Like it's like kind of actually limited when you atomize them. I think having an original, I mean, this is what I was thinking about another question, which was like, is there something that seemed like an adaptation to you that actually was original material? And I kept thinking of Knives Out, which it seems like such a sort of, you know, forgive me for saying this racist, but Agatha Christie novel or something like that. I mean, it was a whodunit. It seemed like it was a book, but it was absolutely an original idea. And I think the reason that people responded, I mean, I did like Knives Out. I think the reason it got such high praise was because it was actually an original idea that felt like an IP.
Just to be real shady, let's name names. Who are literary writers whose fiction is bad because it's just trying to be a miniseries?
Well, as Annie Dillard would say, when she's reading a author who's clearly gunning for an adaptation, I smell a rat.
Smell a rat? Dee, you're being very quiet over there.
You know, before I was employed, I might have gone in on this question.
Dee, are you learning? Are you learning to not speak your mind all the time, everywhere?
You know, sometimes my voice doesn't always need to be included.
Wow.
That's also just something you learn in your 30s.
Wow. I mean, Dee, I am astonished and, I don't know, proud maybe? I don't know. I mean, I think we're not going to name names, but it is definitely something like the Iowa voice, like when you pick up a short story collection or a novel and you're like, this person went to Iowa, and you look at the back cover and indeed they did go to Iowa. I do think there's something noticeable about the stories that are set up to be adapt, you know, that are basically the novel as IP generation. And I don't think it's writer's fault. This is how publishing makes money. This is like one of the, you know, and so there's a whole pipeline. There's the novel to legacy TV miniseries pipeline. And so, yeah, of course, writers are poor and they need money and they're writing into that IP generation space. And God bless them. I respect the hustle.
Yeah. I'm never mad at a writer chasing a paycheck. But
exactly.
I also, when it comes to this, because that is so prominent at this point, it's like almost rote. If you just focus on telling a good story, there's a good and your book gets some attention, there's a good chance that there will be interest in that world. So to be writing literary fiction for that purpose, like, bitch, just cut out the middle line and write a screenplay. Like, write a screenplay. You'll get more money from Jump. Like, why waste the time?
I guess, but I would say write the article with the idea that you are going to adapt it yourself.
There is that. Mm. There is that. And Teebs, you and I have talked a lot about that. Yeah. And there is that. And that's a little bit of a different thing. And I'll never forget, I remember when Precious, based on the novel Pushed by Sapphire, came out, meaning when the film adaptation came out. And one of the things she kept talking about is that Lee Daniels was chasing her for years to get the option to do that film. Mm. Because for many, many years, she was like, I didn't write this to be a film. I don't want it to be a film. It's not intended to be a film. And I won't have any control that it's going to be good. And that was very important to her up until a certain point when he convinced her. And I just always think about that because I truly don't know, when I'm in those conversations, how I'm going to feel, if I'm even going to want an adaptation or what I just don't know. I have no idea yet.
The whole thing about that is it's just the direct deposit.
Right. Yeah.
And you get to really difficult choices between artistic control and what your direct deposit looks like. And, I think in a world with so much scarcity for creative professionals, it's hard to fault people for putting their financial security front of mind, especially if they're a person for whom that paycheck can change their life and allow them to have stability. I certainly don't judge that at all, but it's also, it can get in the way of the art being as good as it could possibly be.
And that's what you said before, Joe, about making sure in adapting, for example, Color Purple from a book to a movie to a show, how many good decisions had to be made.
Yeah.
And it's like at every point there needs to be, in my limited experience in this world, executives do not want things that stand out. They want things that conform. And so to make something at all is a miracle, but to make something good is just, oof.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that in that degree, another thing that was so good, I thought it must have been adapted and it definitely wasn't, was Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it was kind of zeitgeisty in the sense that the thing is, the Daniels initially were researching the concept of a multiverse in 2010. And it's just interesting because, in the years since, we've gotten, Rick and Morty, and we've gotten a Multiverse of Madness, and it seems like and Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse or whatever, it seems like there is some kind of consensus about looking to other worlds. I think maybe because this one is so shitty.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes, it is.
I want to end this convo by talking about Moonlight, which of course, what is it? Talk about a successful adaptation of a play. I'm friends of friends with Terrell, and he wasn't involved in the writing of the script, the adaptation at all. He sort of allowed the source material to be used, and then it was made by a straight person. But how many amazing decisions, it's like this thing we talk about with representation. Like, is a straight person the best person to make Moonlight? Maybe not. But holy fuck, did they make a shit ton of fucking good decisions to adapt the fuck out of that play into what is a film that is visually stunning, acted incredibly well, very, it's so placey.
Yeah.
Like, it is so fucking Miami. It is so that place, which, the play is on a stage, so it is not necessarily going to have that element.
That's one where I would never have thought it was an adaptation if I hadn't just somehow known that through osmosis when it was happening. Mm-hmm. But that's, I actually talk about Moonlight a lot when I'm having conversations with like writers and other creatives about writing across difference, because mm-hmm. like, obviously, you know, there was this source material, and Barry Jenkins, as far as we know, you know, is a heterosexual man, but that is one, and there are many examples out there through, you know, decades of this, but that's one really great example mm-hmm. of someone who doesn't necessarily share every identity that's at the center and the core of the art, and still, like, I do not think there was a better person to do that film outside. Mm-hmm. Like I do not think there was. I think it should have been Barry Jenkins, because look what he did. I mean, it's extraordinary. Yeah. So, it's a reminder for people also just that it is possible. Like, there's an right. incredible amount of care and talent and nuance and all these different things that have to go into working across difference really well and really doing it justice, but it can be done.
I'm feeling full, but like I could fit one more thing inside of me. Den knows how I feel.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And to put the cherry on our top this week, Kenya. Kim.
Yes. Okay, so, you know when you're just like burnt out from scrolling and something yes. pops up and you're just like, let me just try this shit. Because yes. I'm sick of going through pages and pages of content. So that happened to Alex and I on Apple TV. And we were marketed this show called Loot with Maya Rudolph. And it's essentially about a billionaire. She plays the wife of a billionaire who gets cheated on. But there's no prenup. So when she gets the divorce, she gets the money.
Oh, my God.
And she also gets his foundation. So it covers basically
the dream, living the dream. Oh my God.
This insane. I mean, it's insane. Joel Kim Booster plays her assistant. Amazing. Shout out Joel. He's so funny. And also his outfits are just so, so amazing. So basically, yeah, she becomes like 87 billion dollars in her bank account. But she has no purpose, so she decides to run the foundation. She's a really rich woman. She does not know how to run the foundation, so it plays a lot with class. And it's interesting because she's Black, so she's like a super, super, super rich Black woman. She's like the third richest woman in America in the show. And then she's like working with everyone that's lower class or working class. And it's just a super light comedy, like even with class and poverty and inflation going on. It was told in a way that I was able to look past it and just see the comedy for what it is. It's completely absurd, but like in the best way. Mm-hmm. So I highly, highly recommend it. And it's super light. It's super, super light. Mm.
We need something super light at this yes. time. I'm literally going to start streaming it right now.
It's so good.
I love eating light.
I was reading or watching something. I can't remember how I got this, but I guess in its initial phases, the way that they sold it was like, I got divorced and all I got was $87 billion, and
that's kind of the gag. And it's just, the comedy is so, so funny. I've always loved Maya Rudolph, like,
oh,
forever.
She's
like
hilarious.
Her
facial expressions,
just, oh my God, I like literally cry laugh. It's just like such a laugh out loud absurd situation. There's also, shout out, there's this like amazing montage where she's like, she found out she got cheated on for a younger woman, and she just goes through the world partying with Joel Kim Booster, like doing hella drugs.
Yeah.
And it is like one of the funniest montages I've seen in a very, very long time.
You sold me. I'm on loop.
Yeah.
I can't
wait. I can't wait. Amazing.
Check it out.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our home at Stitcher. Our producer is the luscious and lovable linguini Alexandra De Palma.
Linguini!
Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, or Joe never cooks again.
Please,
oh,
God.
No.
Oh, no, I would really spiral. I mean, I'm spiraling. I would really spiral.
Five stars. I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs, HEYTEBS, on Instagram, because I deleted Twitter. And I might delete Instagram by the time this comes out, too.
Amazing.
I'm Joseph Osmondson. You can find me and order my book, which is out in stores now at www.josephosmondson.com. And I'm sorry that it's so timely. It hurts.
And you can... I'm Den Michelle Norris, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at the Den Michelle, and follow my editorial pursuits at electricliterature.com.
I'm Kenya Denise, and you can find me on IG at Kenya Diggit. That's K-E-N-Y-A _D-I-G-G_IT.
If she likes you. If she likes
you.
Find us on Instagram as Gay Sluts Who Read, and join us on Facebook and Twitter at Food for Thought Pod. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics to thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
I feel like our Zoom thought is so slow. It's so slow.
It's so slow.
You got it that time. Loves.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.